In a world where identities are swallowed by corporations yearning for your hard-earned money, and the human experience gets further reduced into sellable ad space for the same greedy mongoloids that never had a childhood themselves, few public spaces remain truly untouched, as is the case with the Joe Van Secret Podcast. Shh. Okay, so as episode 16 begins, I will fire off a fun fact, and then we will just jump straight into our next guest. So the fun fact for today is that a giraffe can go without water longer than a camel. I don't think most people know that. I definitely didn't reading that. And I'll give you a second one, because I'm feeling generous. Anne Frank and Martin Luther King Jr. were born in the same year. That's kind of wild to think about. How old he was in the 1960s when everything happened. Crazy. So with me today is guest number 16. Guest 16, please say hello.
Hello, I am guest 16. That's quite the honor.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure. With me. My pleasure.
All right, so I guess without any further ado, to keep your identity a secret, we'll just jump right into things.
Okay.
And I will start by asking, how was your day?
My day was great. What happened today? I had to take my car in this morning.
Okay.
Which kind of sucked.
Yeah.
You know, you get the phone call back later that it's an estimate of $300. Nothing you were counting on.
No.
But I told him, okay, well, do you really need to do that? Okay, don't do that. Save that for another time. Let's just do the oil change and get me out of there. So I'm waiting for a call back. So maybe when we're done, you'll be able to drive me down to pick up my car?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, perfect. I got the time. I finished work earlier than I thought today,
yeah.
So by all means.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, and on to the next question. What do you do for work, if you could summarize it?
I am a programmer. I write software for my customers, business software, so they can run all facets of their business on the computer, whether it's inventory control, sales, general ledger, payables, payroll, every facet of a small business. It's custom software on a platform that probably nobody's ever heard of before.
It's usually how it is. It's back end, but just
I've done work with this platform probably now, over 30 years.
30 years?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. It's a long-lasting
stuff. The software has changed, and the hardware has actually changed over those number of years.
Yeah, it's
and it's a question of keeping pace with the new technology, but the software has been able to adapt to it, and that's what's kept the business alive. I haven't taken on a lot of new clients over the years, but I haven't needed to because I've been able to maintain the current client base I've got. With all the changes in technology, as their business changes, I've got to change the software. So that's the basis of it. Yeah.
Well, that's extremely interesting because I don't know if we've had many software engineers on or anything.
Well, that's a fancy title. I'm not going to go far saying software engineer, but
just programmer.
Sure. That's a much simpler way of putting it.
So I am curious about that. It is contract based, but do you work out of a company or are you literally,
no.
It's like an actor. You're just your own man.
I am. My partner and I do own a business.
Okay, you do.
And
these are things that I maybe should know because I've known you for a number of years.
We used to strictly be self-employed, but then it got to a point, like this is years and years ago, where the business grew and we were going to hire on associates and we would have to pay them, that we our lawyers told us it was probably a good idea to incorporate. So we've been incorporated for a number of years again. And so technically, I'm not self-employed. I'm an employee of my own company. And I pay myself a salary on a monthly basis based on my billing. So it's never a set amount every single month. At one point back in the 90s, we owned a building in downtown Hamilton.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And we employed probably about, 5-6 people in that building, all working on different projects and whatnot. But then over the years, that kind of dwindled away. We sold the building and now my partner and I and one other associate, we just work out of our own homes and, we're in touch, if not daily, a weekly basis, because we all have our own clients that we work with. It's not very often that we're working on projects together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's a great way to live. I mean, it seems like everything is settled.
It allows for a lot of flexibility. That was one of the great things when our kids were young. If I wanted to be somewhere during the day when they had a day off school, I could just drop what I was doing and say, oh, I'm going into a meeting, and boom, I'm off with the kids doing whatever's yeah. happening, right? It really allows for a lot of flexibility, which I've enjoyed.
Yeah, it's definitely something to appreciate. And, you know, today's economy, obviously everybody's trying to hit up the double jobs and, you know,
yeah.
working yeah. as hard as they can to make ends meet. So yeah. it's a good situation.
Yeah, it has been. It's worked out well for me, for sure.
Now, in the same theme of the work relation, what would you say is the craziest part of your job or the craziest thing that has happened?
Craziest thing that's ever happened.
So I can imagine not a lot of craziness happens.
Well,
but maybe in the beginning.
In the beginning, while you're, you know, maybe not as. That's a good question. I remember one time when we were sitting in a meeting with a client, and I wasn't really sure where the conversation was going, and I said something wrong, and it really upset the client. The client gets up and throws a chair. I'm looking at my, what did I say? What did I do?
Like,
you know? And so there was a bit of a learning curve with that, as far as how to deal with different people, because on a daily yeah. basis, you're going into a different office environment, and you're dealing with different people all the time. And I guess it took a while for me to figure out, okay, exactly how to read people and what pushes one person and doesn't push another person. And, you know, you had to be a little careful. Like, you know, I certainly had no problem talking to one client this way, but I couldn't talk like that to another one, for instance.
So that was
a bit of a learning curve. But what was so good about it was, you know, I was working for one client one day, and I'm working in an entirely different industry the next, a different group of people. That's what kept it interesting, yeah. you know. And that's why I look at people who are, like you were saying earlier, how you're moving from job to job, and you get tired after a certain length of time, whether it be 1 year or 2 years. I never ran into that at all, because on a daily basis, I'm going into a different office environment and dealing with different people. It kept it fresh for me for a long time.
Well, yeah, I'm envious, because, yeah, that does sound like the ideal condition is to change things up. I mean, you know, if every day becomes the same, repetition can cause
complacency, like boredom.
Yeah, because complacency, I wouldn't even say, is necessarily a bad thing in certain industry jobs, but the when repetitiveness can almost, like, cause cabin fever in your own head, because it's like every action is the same at the same time for every day, where you honestly forget what day it is, and then you're like,
but see, back in the day, when we couldn't do all this work online, you actually had to go on site. So there was a lot of car travel back and forth between all my clients and everything like that. Now you talk about cabin fever. That's where almost the point where I'm at right now with my job, because I'm at home all the time, because I can do obviously I can do everything online. I don't really need to go out and see my clients. I'm talking to them on the phone all the time, and I'll go out, you know, maybe once a week, visit this client. Next week, I'll go and visit that client, that kind of thing, but not nearly as much as it used to be. So is there cabin fever happening? Potentially here, with me sitting in that little office.
Slowly,
in the
but sure. But you just say you're going for a meeting, go for a jog. You know,
yeah, I could do that. Or I could get a dog. Hey,
that's true.
I could, time to take the dog for a walk.
Yeah.
Got the park right there. Off we go.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, that's nice. Would it be okay with you if I asked what your relationship status is? Is it
married.
Easy to say that you're married? Yeah,
it's
married with kids.
Married with kids, yeah.
That's great.
How much detail do you want?
Not much in that regard, okay. But the question I would ask is, what is the greatest joy you get out of, one, being married, and then, two, being a father?
Being married, I'd say the greatest joy is our shared interests and that we're able to continue to do things together that we both enjoy. That to me is one of the biggest things that I get the greatest joy from, for sure. And as far as our children are concerned, seeing them succeed, having successful careers, relationships, that to me, again, is the biggest joy that I get from being a father.
Yeah, because obviously that's something I have yet to experience. I'm not a dad.
Yeah.
So whenever it comes to asking people who are parents those kind of questions, it could hit my audience in a way that it doesn't necessarily for me, because I don't have that like perspective.
Yeah.
Where I literally couldn't even imagine that concept. It's like when you watch a movie, sometimes you get lost in the character that is being portrayed, and you can like feel empathetic for the situations they're in.
Yeah.
So it's like you see someone who's a father in a movie, and you can like feel for them, like whether it's, you know, trying to help their child or like save their child or whatever. And that's something I'm looking forward to, because I can imagine that I would love it and it would be this amazing experience, but I won't know until it happens.
And the cool thing about it too is, it's as the kids are you know, going through all the different stages of their life, you know, first you're taking great pride and joy in their first step and their first words and
the
you know, the first day of school and all that kind of business. And now we're at an entirely different phase of life with, you know, they're buying their first home or, you know, they're getting married. And, you know, there's so many different aspects that that you take such, you know, pride in as they're, you know, reach these milestones in their lives. It's really it's important, and it's, I take great great pride and joy and love in that, and seeing my kids doing well.
And yeah, they I forget if this originally came from someone else, but it was etched into a school bus in Alaska from Alex the Supertramp, whose original name I forget, but he renamed himself back in 1996.
Okay.
There's a movie called Into the Wild based off of
his
life.
His name.
He renamed himself Alexander Supertramp. His name wasn't even Alexander before he changed it, but he like left society
because
he wanted to try and find happiness in nature because he didn't like the material world that he lived in.
Yeah.
And he ended up getting poisoning from a berry that he had, and he died in the school bus where they found him. But before doing so, he etched in the school bus, "Happiness is shared with others." That was like when he had the epiphany of what the meaning of life is. And it was, it's really powerful. Completely alone.
In Alaska, all alone, and that's how he died.
So it's story. No, but it's sad, but it's a story of growth and opportunity for the rest of us, where it doesn't take dying in Alaska to figure that kind of thing out. And yeah, that moment in that movie, and then obviously the fact that it's a real life thing that happened, that experience that the person had in order to reach that conclusion, I feel is so powerful. Mm-hmm. Where,
well, then on a similar vein, we just saw a movie this weekend called Leave No Trace. I don't know if you've heard about it.
I've seen it.
You have.
With Ben Foster?
Well, it's the father and the daughter, and they're living in the wild and everything
because
like that.
Because the father had PTSD out of the military. Yeah.
And they wanted to live alone, but the daughter finally found out what it was like to be with other people and how important that was in her growth, whereas the father was going in the other direction. Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was.
Relationships. And keeping in the vein of, or maybe what we were just talking just a second ago about growing up and the experiences you have, what was your childhood like, if you were to try to summarize it?
Wow. That's a big question.
It is definitely. It's like, hey, what was your entire life like that led you to being an adult? But if to make it more specific, what was it? Was it lonely? Were there tons of people? Nine plus? Who knows? Was it challenging?
Did you go through a lot of my identity? Now they've narrowed it down to two possibilities.
What are you talking about? I got my, you know, 20-year-old audience in Mississauga, you know.
Yeah, it was never lonely.
Yeah, whether or not you wanted that.
Yeah, exactly. It was always a full house. It was always a dinner around the table, all of us at the same time, all the time. That was great. Even going to school, living close enough to school, we could always come home for lunch, and there was always everybody home for lunch. It was a full house all the time. And then not only with our own group, you know, all the friends, everybody had a friend, or everybody had a boyfriend. And so there was constantly people coming in and out of the house as well. So it was a busy place. It was a place that was full of love. I feel blessed that I had all my siblings around me for my entire life, and two loving parents who did their, who couldn't have done any, but they were amazing parents, amazing examples. There was nothing but love in our household. And I feel truly blessed that I was able to grow up in that environment.
Yeah. Cause that's a lot of luck goes into that. Cause it's what, you know, you think of the odds of people getting two parents that are both amazing and, you know, have that sense of community and the ritual.
It's true. Like, with my dad, you know, he set the example of like a strong provider, you know, whether he's, you know, working in the garage or going out in the evenings to help someone finish a basement, or, you know, he's doing his carvings or he's building his furniture. You know, you always see a man at work, right? He was never idle. And that was a great example. It was a great lesson for us all to learn. And also the way that he it wasn't necessarily that he volunteered, but he was always there to help his neighbors.
Yeah.
And it was a great example for us all to live by. And then you've got Mom, who is just the epitome of love. She just enveloped all of us in this great big warm hug all the time. She was always there for all of us. Again, I can't say how much I obviously appreciate that, and lucky I feel that we had that environment to grow up in.
Do you think it was at all planned? You already know, having that many kids around. Do you think that was like, because how far along the line are you? Are you one of the
right
middle,
in the middle
children?
Right in the middle.
You are. Okay. Yeah.
Four on either side. I was the eldest or the firstborn son. Which my mother always likes to make a joke about that. But,
what's the joke?
Well,
just that, how far
that,
along?
No, that my name should have been Primo.
Oh, what? Is that a name? Is that like an Italian name or something?
It must be an Italian name for number one, right?
Yeah.
I think she enjoys telling that joke. What was the question?
Well, it was, what was your childhood like? So I guess that's part one is family, and then the part two would be with your friends and growing up. Like, did you have a lot of turbulation? Like, did you have a rebellion phase?
No, not really. We had such a good neighborhood that there was kids everywhere in the neighborhood. So, you know, we were outside all the time. It was a different time back then. Yeah, we did have the TV, and a lot of times we'd come and we'd sit in front of the TV just like kids do now. But for a lot of our younger lives, we were outside all the time. And I was a nerd. I was not part of the cool crowd. I would be playing road hockey after school every day, you know, or in the summertime, I'd be playing baseball over at Strathcona Park. You know, that's what we did all the time. We just, we were outside all the time playing kick the can and all those.
Kick the can, that's the thing?
Yeah, wow. Played all those games in the neighborhood. And it was a great neighborhood to grow up in, for sure.
Well, I agree, because even though obviously it was a different experience, it was a very similar neighborhood that I grew up in,
where
I guess still am. I haven't moved out yet. But it just so happened coincidentally that at the time that me and my siblings were growing up, there were at least three other houses that were doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And then now there aren't. There's only one in the neighborhood that has like young kids growing up. So.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate for them, but having
so
many
people.
That's
why I think this neighborhood we're in right now is turning over. Sure, when our,
like
kids, when our kids were growing up, there were a lot of young families in this neighborhood, and they all went to school together and whatnot, and now all those kids like ours have moved up and gone away, and now I can see there's like next door there's a couple of young kids, and down the street it's flipping over again, right? That's just
beginning.
The way neighborhoods work.
Which, usually it's like a blend of it constantly happening, because every year, obviously, people are being born. But you never see it that way. Like, at least I never do. For me, it was like growing up, it was just kids and adults.
Yeah.
There was no teenage, early 20s, anything. And then, now that I'm on the stage.
I remember. Because we had, I guess all us young kids were at one end of the street. And at the far end of the street, there it sees old kids.
Oh, so there was, so you got the
ability. Don't hang around with the old kids, right?
No, they're dangerous.
they're dangerous.
They're trying to grow up. It's a different thing.
Yeah.
Nice. So with the whole idea of growing up in mind, what would you say were your most formative years? Was it in your youth, or do you think it was later, like in college, where you had the biggest change that sort of brought you here?
I wouldn't say. I don't think high school was any kind of big change in my life, because I was like, again, I was focused on
actually focused on school.
I was probably focused on school. You know, I went out and played for the teams only because my buddies were. I never made the teams, but I would go and try out, or I would sit on the sidelines and that kind of thing. But high school was it was a lot of fun. I just did the normal kid stuff in high school. So as far as formative years are concerned, it would probably have to be more towards university, and really growing up. like I didn't have the experience of actually living away from home. Well, I did in second year university. I decided I needed to have the living away from home experience. So I actually lived in residence in second year university, which still was a stupid thing to do. It was a stupid thing. I hardly spent any time there. Yeah, sure, I spent the weeknights there, but I either went to my grandmother's place on the weekend or I came home to Burlington on the weekend, as I was only in Hamilton, right? So it was easy to get back and forth. I made some friends, but, that's where I met my wife.
I remember seeing a picture of the two of you, crazy young, the youngest I've ever seen you. Or I shouldn't say that. I guess we've seen kid pictures of you, but you in college with her, and I'm like, man, I who didn't meet when they were young out of all of the people I know that are in your group of your circle of pals.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's crazy.
Well, we were the, as far as our circle of friends that we had back then, we were the first ones to get married, Sandy lived with three other girls in university for 3 full years, or at least the final 2 years of university. Neither one of those girls have got married, so it's kind of weird that she was only the one out of the four that did get married. But then, all my buddies got married eventually, they got married later, and then in the interim, we have different interests than they do because we're starting a young family.
Yeah,
and then you kind of lose touch, and that's one thing I regret, having lost touch with all those guys from back in high school and university. So, but then as you move on to a different phase of life,
you make new friends.
You make new friends when your kids are young and they're into sports, and you meet all the hockey moms and hockey dads, and you got a whole new circle of friends. It's just kind of keeps, it's like a circle, keeps going around, right?
Which, that's one thing that I never took into consideration when I was younger. Coincidentally, the friends I have now just happen to be the friends that I made when I was like 6. So I'm probably lucky in that regard, where it's like I'm in a privileged sort of position here to be talking about it. But yeah, I always figured when you're a kid, you make the friends and then that's it. And then so you go into adulthood with the same friends. And so far I've done that. But
it works differently for everybody. That out of our four kids, two of them, their best friends are the ones they made in university, and the other two, their best friends are still the friends that they had in grade school and high school, right? And that, it's funny the way it works out. There's no hard, fast rule what happens in your life that made you stick with these friends, or it just happens.
It's the way that everything turns out is usually for the better. Like people can go from like bad to good, where it's like they make mistakes when they're young and then they become a better person as time goes on.
Yeah.
But rarely you find someone who like is like a good-hearted person who becomes bad, right? It would take an exceptional person to enter their life to make them go that way.
Except in on TV when you're watching.
Exactly. Breaking Bad. Literally. That's the ultimate pity of like someone going from good to bad. But.
Nobody's got their guts in real life.
No, you might have a midlife crisis, but nobody's going to become a supervillain. So what's another question I can ask here for you? I'm trying to think what a good one would be. This one's usually always interesting. What do you think about destiny? Do you put yourself in the camp of a fate believer?
When I think of destiny, I always think of that one scene from Back to the Future.
Refresh me. I have seen it, but it's just
Marty McFly.
Yeah.
And he's saying to his to the girl that he wants to take to the that prom. He's saying, "You are my density," meaning that he wanted to say, "You're my destiny," but he got the words mixed up. As far as destiny is concerned, do you believe in destiny? Do you believe in fate? That's your question, right?
Yeah.
Or is everything preordained? Or can you actually make a difference?
Yeah. Well, it's a complicated word, I think, because obviously it's changed in time. Like in philosophical terms, there's predeterminism or indeterminism. Mm-hmm. So predetermined is obviously it's predetermined. Indeterminate is that, particles flying in space.
As a believer in God and having faith, are you not taught that is what it is?
Because he's outside of time. But then it draws into the paradox of, how do you have free will if he already knows everything that's going to happen? Because if knowing that, it's almost like if a tree falls in a forest, no one's around to hear it. It's like if God is all-seeing and all-knowing, so if he, and he's outside of time. So if you're outside of time, then you can see everything, right? So he can see your entire life.
Okay.
Which is obviously practiced in church.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that's practiced is free will.
Yeah.
So it's a conflict of interest. But
yes,
it's obviously something where if you spend too much time alone in a room,
right,
these thoughts
I think if you just take that, when you said free will, that is what makes all the difference in the world. You have free will to make your own decision to make your own path in life. You're not going to say anything is preordained or, you know, yes, it may be fate that you actually make that decision to take that path in life. But
it's still up to you.
It's still up to you.
Yeah. There was a neat little theory. I don't know if I would call it a theory, but a thought that I had regarding it where, because we don't know, right? That's why it's philosophy. It's all up in the air.
Yeah.
But it could be where it's like there are certain intersecting points. So that could be the fate-based system. So you have free will. There's just multiple branches or multiple paths. But it's like you're always going to meet that one person, right? Whatever. Something like that, where it's like some people feel like it was such a serendipitous occasion that you would meet on that day or whatever,
yeah,
with whoever, or they would get the job, or that you would come up with that idea because of these series of seemingly inconsequential events that culminated.
And what about the poor guy who seems to have nothing but bad luck? How do you explain his poor predicament? That's just no...
That's optimism versus pessimism, you know? Because, yeah, you could focus on the children that die in hurricanes,
yeah,
which is completely just random, and there's no causality towards it other than just randomness. But,
yeah,
it's the aspect of how you want to live your life, now you want to... what you want your mindset to be,
yeah,
a worldview, right? So it's like you can look things through positive light, negative light. It doesn't change the events that happen in the world.
Yeah.
Like, don't be delusional to what's happening. You should be a realist, but
it's
up to you on how you interpret what happens in the world. So,
I would see myself as more of a realist. I'd rather be a little more optimistic than pessimistic. I'd rather see the bright side on things. I'd rather try to make... I'm not going to make light of a situation, but I'd rather try to lighten a situation.
Yeah.
You know, just...
if it's just the air, you know, try to lighten the atmosphere. Yeah. For me, it's sort of... maybe it's because I'm younger, but it's like I'm on that more optimistic side.
Yeah.
Maybe life hasn't beat me up too much.
Yeah.
I'm still always cautious.
You don't want to be that young guy
running into a hole.
You don't want to be that young guy walking around with a cloud over your head, right?
Yeah.
You want to have a optimistic outlook on life, and you know, it hasn't beaten you into the ground yet, right?
Yeah, where it's like, I still know that people always want to take advantage of you as far as business goes, because I'm obviously just at the beginnings
of
that.
But you always want to see the good in people.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And plus, everybody was a baby once. Everybody just wants love, you know?
Yeah.
You can't take that away from the basis of human psychology. Everybody just wants good. It's just some of them have a twisted way of, or a confused way of getting to that, what they think is good for them. Yeah.
But I'd be curious... I don't think I've ever had the experience where I've run into a person in business who just seems so twisted that...
pure militia.
Yeah.
Nothing like that.
No. I've met people who have narcissistic tendencies, but you just kind of, okay, put that over there. You know,
It's just their character.
Just their character.
Yeah.
Whether they're malicious or not... I've never ran into anybody in business that is there to really screw you over and...
yeah, just do bad things.
Yeah. You only see that in the movies.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there are people out there like
that. Cruel Intentions, that whole series of movies.
So
on to the next question, and this one's definitely more lighthearted. What do you consider beautiful? I used to ask the question, what is your favorite type of art? But I think to make it more general is a lot better. What do you find beautiful? Because it could be anything. Seasons, long walks, sports games, dancing, drawing, whatever.
What do I think is beautiful? Nature. Whether it's a beautiful sunset, whether it's, we're in the middle of hiking the Bruce Trail. I shouldn't say in the middle of hiking the Bruce Trail. We're almost finished the Bruce Trail.
Yeah.
We've only got one hike left. But the beauty that we've seen while we're hiking the Bruce Trail, just the landscapes, and when we've gone hiking over in Europe, that's what I think as far as you know, something you can see is beautiful. Nature, absolutely. All the different aspects of nature. I think it's gorgeous. And then the other side of it would be a person with a beautiful heart. You know, they're a kind person who you can just see who's always there. You know, with a kind word, with a smile, with a warm embrace. That is beautiful too.
Yeah,
that's my right. definition of beautiful.
Okay. Kind of better, you know, kind of put it better myself, I guess.
Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, because when I think of beautiful, it's right on the nose. Like, the first thing that comes to mind isn't the kind people, even though it should be, because obviously I love that as much as anyone else does. But, yeah, nature is always number one for me.
Yeah.
Where nature beats out, like, when I think of traveling somewhere.
Yeah.
Where I
think
would
you go? What would be your number one destination?
The next one that I have, because I just recently went to the Rocky Mountains this year.
You did?
It was gorgeous. Yeah,
yeah.
I spent... 10 days on the road. Me and my girlfriend landed in Edmonton, rented a car, took it to Calgary, and then from Calgary to Banff, and then up to Jasper, and then back across like a big square back to Edmonton.
Nice.
We flew out of there.
Yeah.
It was gorgeous. Yeah.
We did the same thing years and years ago.
Yeah.
We flew to Edmonton, rented a car, drove down to Calgary.
No way. What they
and
say.
Then we rented an RV from there.
Jeez, okay,
and
so you
then drove all the way through Banff and all the way out to Vancouver Island to Tofino.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And then all the way back again. So, yeah, I just love that kind of thing. You know, and I can always remember the one thing that Sandy always said to the kids as we're driving through the mountains. Oh, look at the view, look at the view. It became a common refrain. Look at the view, because it's just gorgeous.
You can't stop, and it's always something more beautiful.
But
to
what
see,
do the kids have to say? Oh, it's the same mountain. We've seen it before.
Well, it's like, all right.
Hey, they're
they
kids,
haven't lived
right?
long.
Yeah,
they don't know that the rest of the world is just flat.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's the same thing when we've been hiking the Bruce Trail. You know, we can come to the edge of the escarpment and look out, and you never get tired of the view. You never, whether you're standing over here on Mount Nemo looking out over Burlington, or whether you're standing up in Georgian Bay looking out over the bay with all the cliffs and everything, you never get tired of the view. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Something about it. I don't know. It's call back to home, right?
Yeah.
However many hundreds of thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
We're just hanging out in nature.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know what else is more.
Like here in the backyard.
That.
This is beautiful.
Yeah. By the way, audience, if you couldn't tell, there have been some helicopters and stuff to indicate that maybe we're not inside a building. This is a gorgeous backyard. You did good. Is any of this recent? Any of this work? Or has this been here forever? Because I just never hang out back here.
We built this deck three summers ago. We just recently lost a tree on the other side of the fence, which took away a ton of privacy. That used to be entirely enclosed in by a tree, so it's kind of opened it up a bit. So you do see the people walking back and forth and whatnot. I had to close the pool just this past weekend. It was kind of always a sad event when you have to close the pool.
Yeah, and then you have today.
And then
where
we
it's
have days like
warm.
Yesterday and today when
I
could have gone in it. No, it's wonderful. We do spend as much time as we can out here during the summer, for sure.
Yeah. So now that it's we are 33 and a half minutes into the podcast, I think I'm going to switch things over to the next segment of questions. This is going to be the opinion side. You can, of course, say pass if you want. Most people are completely moderate, like they're just neutral on these things, or they might be more leaning in one direction or the other.
Is this like a rapid fire kind of thing?
It can be if you want. It's definitely more exciting that way because then I can get through every single one because I have too many to last, right?
Okay,
or it's like for some people,
I
can only get one or two.
If I feel I have to comment on anything, I will. Okay.
All right, great. Then I will start with the first one that everybody in the audience knows. What is your opinion on guns?
They should be banned.
They should be banned outright.
They should be banned completely.
Hunting license.
Well, okay. You know,
that's
you hear about how they banned guns completely in Australia and other places like that, and they haven't had any.
And then
gun
you look
violence.
At statistics, yeah.
So, but then tell me, do they have hunting rifles in Australia? They must.
Probably, yeah.
So I'm sure there is a compromise somewhere as far as that goes. But as far as. But then all the gun violence that we're having in Toronto recently, I'm sure none of those guns are bought legally. So it's more, ban guns, but then it's also enforcing. You know, where these guns are being bought illegally. I don't have the answer.
Yeah,
and obviously the politicians don't either.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's something that has to be addressed and addressed aggressively.
Yeah. Because Toronto shouldn't be a dangerous place. No. I mean, was it 10 years ago? I don't remember the news talking about the stuff that's going on now.
Well, there might have been 10 years ago knife violence. Not necessarily gun violence.
Or now it's not gang related, it's innocent bystander related. Yeah. That's terrible. Yeah. That's probably the worst part where it's like, obviously it's terrible when people die, but when it's gang related, it's violent people who want to act violence on themselves. Yeah. When it's bystanders, that ups the level of just moral panic.
Yeah.
In other words, like, absolutely, we have to deal with the situation.
Yeah. Like, we're all vulnerable. You know, you could be walking down the street and
in the middle of the day. Yeah, like, exactly. There's no time where it could be.
Yeah, but then you think in your mind that, okay, all this gun violence, it's all isolated to gangs. So, I'm not involved in that. It's not going to touch me. I'm safe. But then you always have collateral damage easily,
that's
right?
True. Yeah, and it's not like if we just leave them to their devices.
I think, the government has to step up and do something in order to enforce whatever gun policies they have, whether they're being enforced or not enforced, strong enough, but something has to be done. Yeah, for sure.
Total agreement. And everybody has. I had an American on who was raised in the culture of using guns. She was, raised on a farm, and, she had, as a child, shot guns, target practice and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she's still... I don't know if it's coincidentally that she's more on the liberal side, but she says that, she's against guns as well.
So basically, all you need to do is make sure that your gun laws are in place for hunters. And what do hunters need? They need rifles or something like that.
Yeah, one-shot rifles.
Nobody needs a shotgun. One-shot, exactly. Nobody needs these automatic weapons.
Yeah.
Not necessary. So to me, it sounds like a simple enough thing to do.
It's the produce of war, isn't it? In America, the military has the budget to produce these, and they're the same guns that are being sold in America, right? Because if they overproduce, or however the buyer-seller relationship lasts, bullets go away, but the gun's still there. So I'm pretty sure that's what's happening. It's because who's creating this other than the military? So you have a surplus of these things, so you gotta.
Well,
it's like a Walmart. You gotta ship
indeed,
it out.
If that's indeed the case. I think the government should be able to control that, you've got always hear about the gun lobby, how it's such a big thing.
It's a cultural battle
because
in America it's the Wild West where you have a right to bear arms. What are you gonna do? Anyway, on to the next one.
Okay.
What is your opinion on tattoos?
I don't have any.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
And I don't think I ever would. I got a buddy across the street who became an Iron Man, like my sister, right?
Okay, yeah.
And once he had done it, he went out and got a tattoo. So maybe if I had accomplished something like that, maybe I would have gone out and gotten a little tattoo or something. I can think of no reason for putting anything like that on my body.
You don't have any piercings or anything either?
No piercings. I wouldn't do that. I hate pain. I'm not good with pain.
I'm not a fan of pain, but I do have tattoos. Don't have any piercings.
Show me.
You want to see? I got them all up here. I got four total. I'm going to get the fifth one next year. I got this one when I was 18, the top one. Bottom one when I was 20. In Belgium when I was 22. This one when I was 24.
And what are they all?
I made them myself. This one is my name in an ancient Greek language.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
This just says lightly, but it's spelt very incorrectly on purpose. Just making fun of the English language.
Okay.
The middle one is a symbol I made. This one's a symbol I made. And then the one over here is going to be a symbol I made.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So sort of related to the books that I'm writing.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where it doesn't matter, right? I'm not showing them off. I keep them where they're hidden. And they're just for me, What are you going to do?
Yeah. And right where you can't see them either unless you...
That's the point. It's got to be above the sleeve. I'm not going to let it drop at all.
Yeah.
But teach their own. And for me it's like... I feel like if it's around people more, they become more accepting of things. That's just how it works. When I ask this question to older people, they're usually like, it's terrible. I can't believe people are destroying their bodies that God gave them. What are they doing? And then it's like, you ask the younger people and they go, oh, I don't have any tattoos, but I don't care. I got tons of friends who have sleeves and it doesn't matter. So yeah, I don't know if it's an age related thing or not, but yeah, for me, it's, I don't care.
I don't think it's an age related thing because I don't think, you can ask any kids your age as well. They say, oh, no way.
They probably,
I don't think it's age related.
Yeah. That's good. On to the next one. What is your opinion on nationalism. Would you consider yourself a proud Canadian? Does that concept really heat a fire in your heart?
What's my other option if I'm not a proud Canadian?
To be indifferent.
I think being a Canadian citizen, you can't be anything but a nationalist.
Because it's such a great country, comparatively. You look at
I'm Canadian. I love my country. So the answer is yes.
There is to it. Great. Yeah. Simple and sweet and to the point. It's good. What is your opinion on spirituality? So you're obviously religious, but then the further point of that would be the spiritual aspect. Do you partake in any practices? Are you a big believer in ghosts or orbs or anything?
Nothing like that.
No?
I have a very difficult time believing in all that pyramid stuff, or whether it's...
like the conspiracy theories.
I'm not a big,
it reeks of con artists.
You can have your faith and believe in God, but then spirituality, when you take it to the next level, when you start talking about all this, hokey stuff, I just don't go for any of that stuff. I am more of a down to earth,
Well, back into the realist aspect, right? You don't hear of a lot of people who are like that, who are say that they're also realists, because... Yeah. It takes a level of skepticism as well to have that sort of mindset. So.
Yeah. But I don't want to discredit anybody who believes in that kind of stuff and has a faith. So I will.
Because obviously, if you're not hurting anybody, then it's teach their own.
To each their own.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's good. What is your opinion on drug use? And I use the term drug in a general sense. Do you binge drink coffee or alcohol?
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm going to guess heroin's off your table.
What is
heroin? Not
you. As far I enjoy beer on the weekends.
Yeah.
I have maybe about 3 cups of tea a day. There's my drugs of choice. I have wine on special occasions. That's about it. I have no issue with people enjoying alcohol. As far as tobacco is concerned, and now this whole business with marijuana,
weed will
be legal soon. Is everybody now going to start, going to be high on marijuana all the time? That just sounds ridiculous.
It does.
There's now this huge paranoia that we're going to be a country full of
Amsterdamians,
it's a different country. All it is hopefully all it is people who are currently recreational users. They'll just have a different place to go to get their weed to be recreational users. I don't think we're going to have this explosion of people using marijuana, and we're going to have people walking around stoned. I just don't believe that's the case. But that's the way the media is making it out to be, which is I think it's just absolutely crazy. Will I try it? No, because I can't stand smoking. So whether I'm smoking a cigarette or I'm smoking a joint, it ain't going to happen. But you're right, edibles. That sounds like that could be fun. So we have next summer when we have Jube Jubes at the cottage.
There's going to be one label, not for kids.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah,
because that's another aspect too, where there's the hysteria of the marijuana being legal. Everyone's going to do it, and kids are going to be influenced, and it's the devil's cabbage. I feel like either you're already doing it, so now you're just going to do it legally, or some people are going to try it. But it's not going to then turn them into stoners, right?
And then what I heard the other day was, like, there's all got to be these rules that are going to go into place and everything else like that. I'm pretty sure I just heard this yesterday, was that when police officers or first responders now can smoke recreationally, just like all the rest of us, but if they do, they cannot go back on service
The next 8 hours or whatever.
No, it was more than that. I think it was like a full 7 days or something like that. Which is nuts.
Yeah.
How is smoking a joint any different than having a beer?
Yeah.
I don't know. Technically, I don't know.
They say the THC, that's the chemical that gets you high in it, because there's two different chemicals. One makes you mellow, the other one makes you high. So the one that makes you high, THC, it lasts in your bloodstream for like an upwards of 2 days, but you're sober after 4 hours. So then it just exists in your bloodstream. It doesn't change your consciousness. It doesn't stay high or anything like that. So from a technical standpoint, Yes, because if you like shoot someone when you're a cop on duty, even if it's been a day after you smoked weed, and then they're like, we check your blood, says got THC in it, now you're going to jail because you were high when you shot somebody. And they go, no, I was dead sober. And it's like, so from the technicality standpoint, 2 days. 7 days is too much.
I'm not sure exactly the number that I heard.
Yeah.
But I heard it was big.
It was excessive compared to alcohol.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's throw a big one here at you. What is your opinion on the current state of the world?
Current state of the world?
Yeah.
There's a lot of crap going on, isn't there?
It's a busy place.
It all seems to be centered around this one idiot down in the U.S.
Yeah, one guy who's a buffoon. It doesn't matter if you believe in what he stands for.
The one thing that I like is the fact that the world is united in their indignation over this guy. So in that sense,
it's good to see us come together.
Yes, sure. Come together over something.
Yeah.
And it's this guy. When he got in front of the UN and he gave his little campaign speech and how all the other leaders from around the world were snickering and laughing at him, like,
look at this guy, shouldn't take him seriously.
Yeah, that was perfect, but boom, over his head, he doesn't even notice. And
narcissism you have. World War III, is it going to happen soon?
No.
Or you don't think?
I would think there's just a common sense in the world that there's not going to be anybody in their right mind that's going to be pushing any kind of button, that's going to be launching any kind of missiles, because all it will immediately do is mark the end of your country. And not only that country, but
the rest
your
of the
country.
World just looks at you.
Yeah.
Not the one you're
talking about. I have faith in humanity that there's going to be enough common sense that nothing like that is going to happen. Back in World War I and World War II, there were not weapons of mass destruction that could destroy the world. Now there is, and hopefully the leaders of the world understand that, and that will never happen. Common sense will prevail.
But that's
my naive outlook on it, and I could be entirely wrong. You've got this clock that's ticking towards midnight and all that business.
It's been doing this since the 80s.
Exactly.
But I would say... Yeah, comparatively to Cold War, the only thing that came close to that was the whole tweet war between Kim Jong-un and Mr. Trump. Because that was the only moment where I got spooked a little. And then it became a thing where, they're calling each other's bluff and they're both, bro, dude, guy, pals.
Now they're exchanging love letters.
Yeah, so it's like, obviously that's not good, but at least the fear that I had is completely gone. Where it's like, World War III is going to happen. Yeah, but... you think he'll get a second term?
I hope not.
Because he originally won through social media because Facebook just wasn't good at their job and they created bubbles unintentionally using their algorithm.
Yeah.
So people stayed in the camps and it radicalized them. So we got half the country to vote for him.
Yeah.
But this time around, I'm pretty sure his approval rate is like 30%. So it's dropped.
Yeah,
I hope so. I'm going to think.
The only issue is when he does lose... Are they going to be able to get him out of the White House? He'll refuse to
leave.
That's
a spooky one. Yeah, he's going to say redraw, and then he
leaves again.
Oh,
absolutely!
I don't believe it.
Or he's going to try to get some bill passed that makes him president for life.
Oh yeah,
and he'll never have to leave.
Yeah. And then who knows what will happen, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people are saying assassinate him, and it's like, no, dude.
Yeah.
Like, we're better than that. We're better as a society.
Exactly. But what will be interesting, they have these elections, these midterm elections, whatever they're all about, whether they do elect Democrats over the Republicans, whether he can see the loss of support he has.
Yeah.
But then who's he going to blame now? He's going to blame China for interfering with the elections.
Sure.
Yeah, he was the Russians. Well, it's not going to be the Russians anymore. He's got to blame somebody else.
Yeah.
So he's already going to start working on that, start blaming the Chinese for interfering with the election results. Talking about elections, are you geared up for our municipal elections?
I don't know. I voted for the provincial one, and now I got to look into it.
These elections have a far greater impact.
For us specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
it depends. Like, do you like the direction that Burlington is going? I can honestly say I don't. Like I love the downtown, but now you drive downtown along the lakeshore, and you got these big, huge condos going up, obscuring the waterfront.
W- which will then cause more traffic because there's more people in it.
Yeah.
It's condensing with condensing a population without changing the road.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
it's dangerous.
Yeah. So. And then you've got the, they're going to, two new condo towers. They're calling them the Twin Towers that are and right across the street from the, no, they're right, they're going to be right across the street from the City Hall, right on Brand Street.
Really?
Yeah. Oof. I know. So, and you're right. This whole intensification thing. I know it's guidelines set by the province to each one of the cities.
Maximum.
We want you to build your population, but we don't want the sprawl. So that you have to intensify. So you got to build up, and you got to build these urban centers where you have the transportation and you've got the shopping and everything to keep
street
the people
jobs,
there.
Yeah.
So because you don't want to increase the traffic, right?
Yeah.
So that's the whole problem they have up in Waterdown, because all they're doing in Waterdown is sprawling. They're building new subdivisions everywhere. And now you can't get in and out of Waterdown if your life depended on it, because there's only that Highway 5. That's one road in and one road out.
I took that today, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. I had one stop to make, so I got off Highway 6 and then was sitting in that for 20 minutes before I just got a kilometer down the road.
You don't want to have to go through Waterdown at 5 o'clock, because you're just never going to make it. Whereas in Burlington, they're taking a different approach. I think the last bit of urban sprawl we had was this new subdivision they've got going up here at Walker's Line and Highway 5, right? And as far as I know, that's the only area we've got left to build in this city. Now it's just building up. And whether it's the right thing to do or not, I don't know.
I got to do my research. Yeah,
you have to do your research and vote for the candidate who supports your views. And that's why I don't think our current mayor is the guy I'm going to continue to support. I've supported him all along, but I think I'm going to change my mind.
Do you know yet? Is there any plug you'd want to give anonymously?
For a candidate?
Yeah, anyone.
No, not necessarily.
No.
But
we'll
I think the one thing, as much as you want to give, and this is just generally, as much as you want to give a new kid a chance, whether it's at a job, you lack the experience, we can't give you the job, right? Well, you got to start somewhere. And I'm thinking, okay, well, you need somebody new in the mayor's office. But then you like somebody with experience to carry on certain aspects of the job that he was doing well.
You know how they do it.
Right. So, but there are candidates in the race who do have experience as far as being council persons, that know what's going on in the city and can make different decisions. But as far as councillors for this ward, for instance, where we live up here, it's all, I had my mind made up that I was going to vote for this one person, and now I'm changing my mind because here he is. He's a new guy. He doesn't have any experience in politics. And then you have, on the other hand, the person with all the experience. You know, what do you do? I don't know.
It's tricky. It's a gamble, sort of feels like, because there's no way to know until you place your ballot.
You got to give, just like, someone like yourself who's starting with a new job, right?
That's right.
You don't have any experience with this job, but somebody's got to put a hand out there and give you the opportunity, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm going to have to think about it.
Wait and see. Yeah, exactly. So as we're tying up here, we got 7 minutes left. Before we get to the outro,
I've never heard that before.
Outro?
Intro, outro.
An intro and an
outro. Is that one of your own words?
No, it's official.
It
it's
is
a real word. Yeah, musicians use it more than, I guess, hosts, but it is an official term.
Okay.
Yeah. It would be like the closing segment or the closing whatever, yeah. I created a third segment, which I did use on the last episode, but this is an hour long, and usually, for the most part, I won't have time for it, but I don't want to extend the time, because I think a perfect podcast should just be an hour long. Any longer than that, and it becomes a little more difficult. So, with the little time we have left, I will try to throw one or two at you, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay.
This one is, if you had to choose, it's like a kid, hopefully the older version of the Would You Rather, but for adults.
Okay.
So I have some that might be too complex to jump into. So we'll try with something similar here. Okay. If you had to choose, which sport would you eliminate from existence? Which major sport? It can't be, ping pong. It's got to be a major worldwide sport.
Oh, wow. Well, your major worldwide sports are soccer. You're not going to eliminate that.
No. A lot of people would be
NFL football, that makes way too much money. basketball, hockey, and baseball, the American pastime. You can't eliminate that. So yeah. I've hit on all the five major sports, and I don't want to get rid of any of those. I'm a sports person. You know, I enjoy sitting down watching the hockey game in the evenings or the NFL football on the Sunday.
There's no one that you prefer over the other.
Oh yeah, I prefer hockey over all of them for sure. So if I had to eliminate one, I'd get rid of soccer.
Soccer. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, but obviously, if I were to ask anybody of any other country other than the Western countries, they'd be like, "That's the only one you keep. Yeah. Get rid of the rest."
Yeah, I know. Yeah. They'd have an easy. Oh, you can get rid of any of the other ones. Exactly.
Yeah. All right, that's your choice. It's locked in.
Okay.
Now, what's another good one? Okay, so this one. That's a better way to ask it. If you had to choose, would you live? What's the proper way to say this? Would you exist only underwater or only in the air? So you can't touch ground at any point, like a superpower. Would you only exist underwater or constantly flying? It would
Aquaman?
Be a thing. Yeah, you're Aquaman.
So
except Aquaman can go on land.
Aquaman or Superman? Who's it going to be?
Yeah. Wow. What's it going to be? Because it's like you go high up enough, you get really cold. So it's like you still want to stay close to the ground. And then with the water, you try to talk to your loved ones just looking up at them in a pond.
I'd live above the ground. Sure.
Yeah. You just hover
above the ground. I have this fear of ground. So.
Okay, because that is kind of a thing where it's a claustrophobic.
Yeah,
you're constantly having water pressed up against you. All right, good.
It's one of those reoccurring dreams you have. I don't know, being stuck underneath the water. You know,
have you had something like that?
I think that's one of those reoccurring dreams I've had in the past. Either that or just falling. But I wake myself up.
Falling, you always wake up. It's a weird sensation where your body can feel the falling even though you're physically just lying in bed and it just wakes you up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I remember, it wasn't reoccurring, but I have had a couple dreams where I've been underwater or on a boat and it's always like an octopus or something, like some sort of sea creature that grabs you in the darkness, right? Yeah. It's just an open water in an ocean and just a thing grabs you. Oh, because that's more of the abyss. It's a fear of the abyss rather than the water specifically.
Why I even have a fear. Like, I have no problem snorkeling because I'm on top of the water and I can hold my breath and dive down. I'm not so sure if I'm the kind of guy who would actually want to do scuba diving, get on a tank. You know, you learn properly in a pool and everything, and then you actually get out there and do it. I don't know if I'm
the open water.
Yes, I'm not sure I'm a guy that wants to do that because, again, I'm stuck way under. You know, I'm not a fan of it.
Right, the air it is. Yeah, same thing. Even though, I think I'm okay with the water. My ears pop now, so I'm getting older.
Oh.
But, it's my choice, too. Cool. All right, so, now that we're reaching the end, there's no plugs you want to hand out. Obviously, there's nothing that you really got to promote. Would you like to reveal your identity, or would you rather keep it a secret? I'll have you on again.
I'm Uncle Joe.
Yeah, there you go, Uncle Joe. That could mean anything. That could be a pseudonym.
I'm Joe's uncle. Joe Ferrani.
Oh, so you're doing
there you
it.
Go.
There
you go. I did it.
Nice. In the last minute or so, are there any passing words of wisdom that you'd like to give to the audience? Anything to leave them with? When you think of, someone's about to walk into a dance and ask a pretty girl, or someone's like going to school knowing that there's a fight waiting for them, what's that advice that you would give to a person on the precipice of major events?
that's a tough one, Joe.
Live, laugh, love.
Sure.
Something like that.
I don't know, just have fun.
Have fun. That's a good one. Yeah. Everybody's been original so far, so that's good. Even though it's such a general thing to ask.
Whatever you're doing, have fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, thanks for having me over.
All right.
Yeah. To the audience, because I don't know if I've mentioned this, but I'm completely mobile. I just have my laptop. I've had, I think, only four people over to my house, and I treat them with a nice cup of water and all that kind of stuff. I try and be hostly. Maybe eventually it'll turn to scotch or something, where I set up an official studio. But
have you done one in the car yet? You've got all these celebrities and cars and whatever, all those different kind of podcasts.
Eventually. Okay. My first one over the phone was the last one, so that was the first, yeah. Okay. You can kind of hear it, but, you know, this isn't a professional microphone, so people already know that they're not getting world-class service from me. But at the same time, this is a fun fact, the brain can acclimate to certain levels of degradation, because obviously the quality of TVs weren't good back in the day, in the 70s and 80s, but it was totally fine. Nobody had a problem watching TV. You weren't like, what's going on? Like, it's all blurry and scratchy. It's like your brain just adjusts to whatever's being given in front of it.
Yeah.
Same goes
with audio. Same with audio, exactly.
Yeah.
Because I remember listening to Maple Leaf hockey games on little transistor radio. So when you first start listening to it, oh, it's so tinny and so far away. But as you get into it and
you just get
it adjusts and it feels like you're right there.
Yeah, that's great.
At least that's the way it was when I was a kid.
Nice.